Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're all right, Finny. You look a bit listless. You're all right.
No, I'm all right. Yeah. I'm just a bit tired. Been building furniture for the last last few days. Yeah.
Oh, great.
What happens when you're injured? Get onto the podcast. We need to find out what happens when you're injured.
I was going to say we can get 20 minutes out of that.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Zero Ducks Given. And let's get straight into the big topics because Stephen Finn is sat there and he's just told us that he's a bit tired because he's been building furniture for the last few days. Finny, talk to me. Why are you only building furniture now? Haven't you been in that flat for several months already?
No, I've moved actually.
Oh.
I've moved down closer towards the coast for the summer months. Yeah, so it came in and it was a complete empty shell of a flat. So I've had to, I've spent 3 days now building furniture. And then to top it off, I've come on at 10 o'clock and I have to sit and listen to you two. So yeah, it's the same story as most weeks when it comes to this, that I'd rather be belt sanding my bollocks than sat here right now.
So, okay, look, you're not on the BBC. So you're allowed to name. Is it IKEA?
Come on.
Oh, so you got like some fancy, like are you getting it all from Harrison Ford? Is it flat pack from Harrison Ford, Master Carpenter, has sent you?
No, absolutely not. No. It's from a shop called made.com.
Oh yeah.
We've heard of them. Yeah.
The thinking man's IKEA.
Yeah.
They are nice, but the spare bed has been a challenge. To say the least, I built an Ottoman bed.
Are the instructions in ancient Greek? You should have had a word with me.
Oh, an Ottoman bed. That's where you've got storage underneath. That's classy.
Yeah, I'm savvy, you know.
Now, I've got a couple of follow-up questions, a few actually. First of all, what sort of flat pack furniture builder are you? Do you ignore the instructions and just dive straight in?
I follow the instructions.
You could tell that. I mean, Tobes, that was absolutely completely obvious. Look at his repeatable action. Look at his, what did Glenn McGrath do? I'll have to do exactly like him. He's completely instruction-based, is Finny.
I mean, this is a man who spent half his career falling over on his ass and knocking the bales off. So he might have good intentions. It doesn't mean the building goes very well. My next question is, what do you line up every single piece of kit to make sure that they're all in the box before you begin?
Yeah, I also do that, yeah.
Oh, God, you're the Alison Mitchell of flat pack furniture. Okay, right, go on.
I like Ali, so that's fine.
I love Ali. She's brilliant. She's very, very methodical. I'm learning a lot about you in this conversation.
Fascinating. And my next question, you mentioned that you'd rather belt sand your bollocks than be sat here talking to us, which, I thought was quite insulting. We got a tweet in the week from somebody called Doobie McFicklebury on Twitter. They said, at Zero Ducks Pod, whilst listening to your clip show episode a few weeks ago, it shocked me to hear that Finny used to sound enthusiastic to be on the pod. He was even polite enough to laugh at some of Toby's jokes. Does Finney remember the moment when that all changed?
Yes. Well, do you know what I feel like? I feel like Donny van de Beek when he signed for Manchester United. I was sold this great hope when Dan rang me up and said, oh, I've got this really fun podcast that you can do. And I thought, you know, I've listened to loads of podcasts and, you know, you do a series of 10, then you have a couple of weeks off, so you don't have to, you know, give yourself a bit of breathing space.
But good point, that actually, that's a very, very good point. I don't know why we, good point. Yep.
And then, you know, we're about 83 weeks in. Producer Sal can find out exactly what episode we're on. I've not had a week off from talking to you two. And yeah, it can wear thin. It's like being with your teammates the entire time. So, I feel like Donny van de Beek sold the dream at Manchester United and hasn't played a fucking game.
Well, if it's any consolation, it's only actually, this is episode number 69. So a magic number, but also...
Why did no one tell us that beforehand?
But also shows how much it's dragging that Finney thinks it's episode 82. He's added an extra 13 hours onto the podcast. That's how long it's felt for Stephen Finn. Whilst I've got you here, Finney, and I'm asking you questions, I've got another one. I thought of this question this week. Do you remember last week I was chatting to you about your bowling average in Test cricket and how it crept over 30 in your final ever Test match? Mm-hmm. And I said, would you sacrifice a few wickets to have a bowling average under 30? And you said, absolutely. Right, here's my question. You got 125 Test wickets at 30.4. Would you accept 99 Test wickets at 29.99? So you lose your 100th wicket, but you get a bowling average under 30.
Brilliant question. Great question, Tobes.
Thank you.
Oh, he stumped him.
He's thinking about it.
Oh!
Yeah, hello. I'm a bit stumped.
Oh. I mean, I've never seen this happen before. Look at him.
I've got it.
Normally, he's so certain. You know, he's so like, you know, he's like a professional sportsman, normally, isn't he?
Yeah, but 100 is his own mind, isn't it? You're part of a club when you've taken 100 Test wickets.
You want to be part. You always want to belong, don't you, Finney? We need to have a chat about that. Get the couch out, lie down, and let's have a little chat about that.
Don't get on the couch. He's built it a full fucking apart straight away. You stay wherever you are. Whatever you do, don't get the couch out. So you're going to go for you're going to stick with your current stats of 125 at 30.4, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Well, when I said you could take a few off, I meant 5, not 26.
Got you. Okay, fair enough.
That's a whole series and a bit's work.
Yeah, I just wanted to see where the level was. Just wanted to see where the level
was. His average 29.99 when he had 99 wickets or not?
It must have been
way less.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was about 28. It was about 28.3 or 4, something like that.
That's quite specific, isn't it? He really did know, didn't he? He really did care. But once you join the club, though, once you join the club, do you think maybe joining the club, Finney, was part of the reason that you weren't quite as on it towards the back end there? Because you're like, you're in the club now.
I think I just bowled shit in my last Test series and that cost me my entire career.
Well, that's a cheery thought.
I never thought I'd say this. Should we go back to the flat back furniture?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, well, we haven't actually asked him what flat back furniture he's actually got. It's not like a bookcase, surely.
No, I built two beds from scratch.
Nice work.
I built
two.
A coffee table, which wasn't that hard. That was just a few screws and, you know.
Well, it's basically a flat top and four legs, isn't it? I mean, that really can't be tricky.
Well, no, this is a two-tier coffee table, actually.
No. Oh. Someone's earning.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, not from this. Then what else? The sofa came with no legs on. Ooh. So I had to put the legs on.
Came with everything except the legs, did it?
Well, no, the legs, they just came in a separate box.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So basically, you had to screw four legs on a sofa, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how long do you think that's supposed to take?
No, that was the easy bit. The beds were tricky because they've literally come in 1,000 pieces and I haven't fallen through it yet.
Okay. And two, though.
Did you not get the option? Because when Pips and I got our bed, we were lazy and we did that thing where you pay extra for two blokes to come in and erect it for you.
I didn't get the option with that.
Oh, would you have taken that option? Because I recommend it thoroughly.
My wife always wants that option. I can tell you that for now.
It was... do you know what? My dad loves DIY, so he actually came down to Brighton for the day, driven by my mum. He came in with his toolbox and his hammer.
Oh, it's all coming out now, isn't it? Oh, you've taken about 10 minutes to mention the help from your old man.
Yeah, my 78-year-old dad came and helped me put my flat pack furniture together.
Yeah, but I suspect your 78-year-old dad is extraordinarily capable in a way that you're not, because you basically
pretty much
been put through the system of international cricket from the age of next to nothing, whereas your dad's a horny-handed labourer who knows what it's like on the front line.
Well, I tell you what, it's funny, actually. When I go and watch Hertfordshire League cricket, or when I did a few years ago when I lived in the area, I used to go around and people would say, oh, you're Terry Finn's son. So I was never Stephen Finn. Even when I'd played 100-odd games for England, I was never Stephen Finn. I was always Terry Finn's son. And they always told me, you bowl quick, but not as quick as your dad did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You won't get any sympathy from me on this topic, by the way. Yeah, it must have been tough being Terry Finn's son. Yeah, I'm sure that was a real hardship for you there, Stephen.
Hey, my dad was the last remaining headmaster to use the cane in England. So do you know how difficult it was for me in the early 80s?
Fucking hell.
Yeah, not great.
Explains a lot. If ever there was an advert for the fact that that type of punishment doesn't work, I think you are it, Dan.
Well, he didn't actually cane me, but he was very vocal on radio and TV about how corporal punishment was still a good idea. it was not helpful in the playground.
When you're playing with your spin tops and stick and ball or whatever else you had back then.
No, thanks, Dad.
Right, I suppose we talk about cricket at some point. And the big news story since we last got together is the appointment of Finney's old best mate, Brendan McCullum, as the new England Red Bull test coach. Finney, obviously, been on the receiving end of a swashbuckling Brendan McCullum. Genuinely, as a bloke, I've never met the guy. I think he's very cool and he was a wonderful, wonderful player. What can you tell us about him? Did you get to know him at all in playing against him over the years?
Yeah, he actually specifically told me that he tuned into your radio show for 2 minutes, thought it was shit. And then turned straight off and said, fuck that bloke. Don't want to hear that again.
He's on fire today, Finney. He's fucking fire.
Off, Finney, isn't he? Yeah.
I played with Brendan McCullum for Middlesex for 2 or 3 summers and played under him as a captain. He changed the way that people view one day cricket in the world, didn't he, really, with the way that he played with New Zealand, the way that he took their test match team from being okay to very good and laid the foundation of the platform for Kane Williamson to carry it on. And I suppose that's going to be the biggest test of his coaching reign, will be the legacy that he manages to leave, and if it can be something of the ilk that he did with New Zealand cricket.
I think it's going to be fascinating, isn't it, Dan? Because I think it's a very sexy, exciting appointment. It's a very un-English appointment in some ways because of that. There is an argument, you could say, that England's problem in Red Bull cricket the last few years has certainly not been a lack of flair when batting. If anything, it's quite the opposite. If anything, we need a few more Geoffrey Boycotts than we need Brendan McCullums. That's me playing devil's advocate. What did you make of it, Dan, when you saw the news? It seemed to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it did a little bit, didn't it? I thought Barney Ronne wrote a very interesting piece. I'm not sure I agree with it, all of it, but it was a very thought-provoking one in which he said that English cricket for years and years and years was run by the old boyocracy. You know, your Gubby Allens and your Pelham Warners and blah, blah, blah. And then in the sort of late 90s and early 2000s, it sort of became the kind of bureaucracy, like the men in suits and the business orientating and things like that. And this feels a bit like a sort of chumocracy. It's a kind of blokeocracy. You know, we've got Keezy, who's been on the telly quite a lot, and we've got Baz, who's like really exciting and does this, that and the other. And is there any reason to believe that this particular combination of people who haven't run a test team before are going to be better than any other combinations we've had before? And I mean, that sort of brought me down a little bit. Thanks, Barney, but he did write it very, very well. But I get what he means. What he means is that, you know, as a sort of, I suppose, a journalist, I'd totally reserve judgment. I'll wait to find out. I have no idea how this will go, because Brendan McCullum might have a profoundly brilliant effect on this England team. He really could do, but we're sort of projecting without knowing. We haven't really got a clue, because there's no sort of history to go on from Brendan McCullum having coached a test match team. And in the past, you know, England had sort of Andy Flower and Duncan Fletcher, and Trevor Bayliss was a white ball coach, but he was a coach of some renown. And Brendan McCullum's making his way through IPL franchises. So look, we don't know. I think if we all hurl lots of positive energy at it and everyone feels good about being part of the project, then it might work out quite well. And we might look back in a year's time and say, this was fantastic.
I think whatever happens, and I said this when I saw the appointment, because I think you're right, there's reasons to be excited and reason to be very wary. And also, we still need to find some players who are good enough to win test matches. But all this talk of him being a white ball player, he played 101 test matches, with a batting average of 38, and whilst keeping a lot of the time. However, I said on Twitter when I saw it, it's certainly not going to be dull. Brendan McCullum's got the most sixes in test history, and Ben Stokes has got the most sixes in the last 10 years in test cricket, and will one day probably overtake Brendan McCullum. Stokes on 85, McCullum's on 107. So it's going to be a fascinating new era for English cricket. But if ever you're going to roll a dice like this, why not do it when you're at rock bottom? Well,
yeah, absolutely. But I don't know if it is rolling a dice, because I'm not sure that Brendan McCullum is going to walk into the England dressing room and go, okay, guys, let's go and smash the shit out of it. Because I don't think that's what people who get paid a lot of money to do very difficult jobs are going to do. So in a way, I think we're projecting our idea of what Brendan McCullum is onto England's test team. And the most important thing for Brendan McCullum is that he has 11 fit players who he can put out there, and a bowling attack that can take 20 wickets. That's absolutely vital. And if he has that, and I'm sure he will prioritise winning test matches, and I think that will, because he'll be, you know, acutely aware of the scepticism around what's going on. And I think that will actually drive English cricket forward, as if they pick the best 11 players available for every game and attempt to win games of cricket without wondering who they're going to be playing in 7 months' time. And I think Brendan McCullum will probably do that. So that is going to be positive.
Finny, my next question for you, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot on this, and I was actually going to give you a heads up, I was going to ask you this, but it's too late now. There's only actually about 2.5 weeks to go into England's first test match, 2nd of June against New Zealand at Lord's. If that test match was tomorrow, and I'm going to assume Mark Wood's not going to be there, and Jofra Archer's not going to be there, and sadly Shakib Mahmood's not going to be there, that we could come on to actually in a sec, who are your four bowlers in 2.5 weeks' time if that test match was tomorrow? Who are you going for?
Well, you probably have to say it's Anderson, Broad, Robinson, and maybe Potts from Durham, I think, would have to be up there. I saw him bowl live at Sussex a few weeks ago, and he bowled like a test match bowler. Good pace, and has took 37 wickets or something so far this year at 18. So, yeah, I think it would probably consist of those four would all be in the squad. And then I can't think if there's anyone else who's been in squads this winter, but Matt Fisher's got a stress fracture, hasn't he? Sam Curran's not up to the level of bowling to be able to warrant a place in a test match team yet. So, yeah, you'd have to say the stock that was so stocked this time last year is probably a little thin at the moment. And yeah, you're going to see a couple of rogue picks, you'd think, in that first test match.
Well, you've got Craig Overton as well, who
pulled up
a bit of a knee issue, but he did then come back and bowl. So we're not quite sure what the status is with Craig Overton at the time of recording. And of course, a spinner. Might we see a spinner? I mean, the pitches have been dry and hard because there's been very little rain. There's going to be a bit between now and the 2nd of June, but not a lot forecast for London between now and then. I saw a game the other day, and it was very seam friendly up to a point. So I mean, they're going to go in with four seamers plus Stokes. And also, where is Ollie Robinson? He was bowling off spin for Sussex the other day. Is he fully fit, or was he bowling off spin because...
No, he had food poisoning.
Food poisoning.
No, he had food poisoning on the first day. That's why he only bowled one over. And then I think he was just fucked after that because the food poisoning wiped him out. Right. And he bowled 20 overs in the second innings. But there was problem with light towards the end of the day, which is why only spinners could bowl. So, yeah, it wasn't ideal preparation for a test match. But Sussex actually play New Zealand this week in a game here at Hove. So if he's fit and firing, we may see him in that. I'm not sure. I don't have any inside information. on that, unfortunately. But yeah, there is still one more opportunity for him to get some overs in his legs this week.
He's obviously a huge one. I mean, he was, you know, probably one of England's shining lights last year. He was England's probably shining light last year and one of the people that held his hand up. There's obviously a few question marks over his fitness, but he's one you'd expect. It is interesting. Obviously, I'm going to keep banging on about Parkinson and how much I want to see him play at some point in the summer, but is Lords at the beginning of June going to be the game for it? That will depend on the pitch. We'll do the batsmen next week. I'll give you a heads up that we'll talk about batsmen who have put their hand up over the last few weeks next week.
Harry Brook, by the way, just very quickly.
Well, Harry, I mean, Brook, that is a name that Harry I Brook expect is us in to an, mention.
It's in an insane place. Harry Brook's numbers are just getting madder and madder. That's a real worry, isn't it? Because he's so young and so good, as in an ordinary world, you'd like to hold him back, because every time England put in young batters, they cease to be the batter they were when they first arrived in the England team.
It's exactly that, isn't it? But his numbers are obscene, and he's got a batting average of 151.6 in the County Championship at the minute, so he's in good touch. But we'll come on to the batsman next week. Finney, a word on Shakib Mahmood, who I think everybody feels just very sorry for. No doubt would have featured in some Red Bull cricket for England this summer. And one of the people that I felt came out of the West Indies tour with their reputation slightly enhanced on some pretty turgid, horrible pitches. You've been there, obviously. Must be quite a tough, lonely place for fast bowlers when you're going through something like that stress fracture that he suffered.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate that I've not had a back stress fracture, which is obviously the worst one that you can have as a bowler. But even these last few weeks, I've had bone stress in my knee, which has meant that it's just kept swelling up and I've had to sit some time out, and it's frustrating because you don't feel like that much is wrong with you. And especially for him, the way that he bowled in the West Indies and the fact that he forewent or he gave up a chance to be an IPL replacement player to stay and focus on four-day cricket for Lancashire so that he could try and make himself a better test match player. Yeah, it's a very unfortunate sequence of events, and yeah, you just hope that he can come back and bowl the same as he did before, which I'm sure he will with the support he'll get, but unbelievably disappointing when he'd had such a bright start in international cricket.
Yeah, completely agree. And obviously, our thoughts for everyone at Zero Ducks give and go out to Shakib Mahmood. And now, Norcross, yes. Every week you want to talk about Surrey being top of the league and yada, yada, yada. Well, you know what? Let's talk about Surrey. Let's talk about the fact that they are a team of yellow-bellied cowards, a team of mental weaklings, mental midgets, bottle jobs. Because three of them, count them, one, two, three, three of them got out between 96 and 91. Nobody put their hand up at a score of 671 for 9 declared and got a century. There was also, by the way, four other half centuries in that innings. They're a bunch of cowards. In fact, Surrey is everything that's wrong with the English Test team. Nobody's willing to bat long.
Well, I mean, you know, that's one way of looking at it. Yeah, the other way of looking at it is to remind yourself of the great Victor Trumper, who is renowned as one of the greatest players who ever lived. I'm sure you're all very familiar with his work in the late 19th and early 20th century. Mm. And what he used to do was when he saw a really good pitch, he would score some runs to make sure that, you know, the team was in a good position. Then he'd get himself out to allow other people the chance to shine. And Surrey is a team which is bonded by the black cat, by the three feathers, by Ich Dean. And they are all looking out for each other. And I genuinely, seriously believe that they got out there on that complete road at Beckenham and they got a whole bunch of runs. Seven of them got over 50. And only those seven people would have, and every single one of them got into double figures, if it were not for the selfless devotion of each of those players to their other teammates' careerist advances. And they broke the world record for the most number of runs scored without anybody getting a century, by 60 runs, or 62 in the end, wasn't it? Beating Uganda against Namibia, which had previously been 609. 671 for 9 declared. They did it with a magnificent 10th wicket partnership. Mark Church and Matt Cole were brilliant on commentary, as the crowd, so tense. They were so tense, as they were all aware that history was about to be made. And it was only, I think, the fact they were so flabbergasted that they didn't make a noise when Surrey went past 609. And to hear that and to be on tenterhooks as that 10th wicket partnership, who was it? Dan Worrell and Jordan Clark. Jordan Clark, who's having an incredible season, by the way, with both bat and ball. He's been superb. I thought it was a moment that Britain can take pride in. You know, as the Northern Ireland protocol and the Brexit agreement is falling apart and there is division throughout this nation, the one thing that brought cricket Twitter together was Surrey's assault on that record, which they did so magnificently. And it was up there, I think, with England, Britain getting second in the Eurovision Song Contest. It was hard to separate, actually. Hard to separate.
Things that people don't care about.
Yeah.
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 Well,
who's got longer hair, Rory Burns or the bloke that we entered in Eurovision?
Good question. Good question. I gave us 5 sets, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let's move on to another huge, you know, speaking of that massive, massive news story and that world record that Dan talked about there for let's be honest, 2 minutes too long. Let's move on to another big news story that nobody cares about. Should bails become a thing of the past after...
What is this all about?
Indian batsman and now commentator Sanjay Mandrekar said that bails are officially redundant now that we have LED light up stumps when they are hit. After David Warner in the IPL had Piers Chawla hammer a ball into his leg stump, but the bails weren't removed. Now, also, you may remember at the 2019 World Cup, there was a lot of controversy over this. 6 times during that World Cup, stumps were hit, but the bails didn't get dislodged. There's an argument it's because the LED lights make them heavier, although I should point out they weigh no more than the extra heavy bales that are sometimes used in windy conditions. That's worth mentioning. But
People call me boring. Listen to this. I mean, what is the exact weight of these heavy bales, Toby?
he says, get rid of them. We don't need them anymore. Now, Finney, as a bowler, you get pissed off every time a rule change gets mentioned on this podcast. You get pissed off. But this is finally a rule that would benefit a bowler. It means you don't have to knock the bales off anymore. And let's be honest, you're not getting any quicker. There's going to get a point where you can't knock those bales off anymore. And this could save you an extra few wickets.
How did you do this weekend?
Luckily, I was at Wembley watching Liverpool win the FA Cup. So I saved my figures for a week. But we did draw Ashted, who are in the Premier League, and we're playing them in a 2020 on Thursday. So don't worry, I'm going to get a lot of tap on Thursday afternoon. You'll be delighted to
hear. Is that thing streamed or not?
That's a good question. It's at their ground. It might be. So there you go. There's your Thursday afternoon viewing.
Fine. Well, put it on the thing because I've just got a nice big 55-inch TV with YouTube here. So if it is being streamed live on YouTube, I'd fucking love to watch you get smashed everywhere on a 55-inch TV and see if you're as ugly on a 55-inch TV as you are on my 12.9-inch iPad.
Well, look, the good news is if you've put that TV together or whatever racket's on, it'll fucking fall apart after 2 deliveries of the cricket match, so you won't see a fucking thing, pal.
That's all right, you'd have gone for 12, so it's all good.
I just ask our producer, is this the very definition of toxic masculinity? I don't know. I'm just trying to work it out.
Are we like Will Smith and Chris Rock?
I would love to come over there and slap you, to be fair.
This is what I mean.
Good. Well, if you slap me, then I come out looking like the good guy. Everybody loves Chris Rock now, and you be the bad guy. You and Dan's Jamie.
I could fit a full red handprint on your forehead. It's that big. Look at it.
I am slowly turning into a combination of Ant and Dec, I'm noticing over the years. I look like they're ugly.
That's a big claim, Tobes. They've got about 12 BAFTAs.
Yeah, I'm like their ugly third brother that's not as successful. I'm like, do you know, somebody once texted into my radio show just to tell me that I look like Freddie Flintoff's younger brother who didn't get enough milk.
That's cruel.
It's cruel, but tell you what, there's no smoke without fire, is there? I mean, there's a point in that. Anyway, to sum up, I'm going to take your answer there as you don't give a shit about the bails.
I couldn't care less. They're not going to happen in the county championship, are they? I couldn't give a fuck about them in international cricket. So, yeah, whatever.
I do care. It's aesthetically pleasing. I mean, stumps without bails just look really fucking naked. I mean, I don't want to see that.
What about... There's been a few times this year where the ball has just hit the bail. So, you know, the bail sits slightly higher
Good point.
Than the stump.
Yes.
Are they going to extend the stumps to make them taller? You can't. You know that delivery that Jofra Archer bowled against, I think, was it Bangladesh
or
Cardiff?
Pakistan? Yeah, I can't remember.
Pakistan, maybe, where the bail went for 6, but the ball didn't hit the stumps.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
you'll never see that again.
When that ball goes perfectly between like middle and off stump and just hits the top of the bale that's between it.
That's beautiful.
Taking away that, it's absolutely beautiful.
That's beautiful. So why, bales are beautiful. Yet again, yet again, administrators and people who run cricket trying to meddle with something that doesn't require meddling with, which doesn't surprise me.
In fairness, it's none of those people. It's Sanjay Mandrake, right? Administrators get really bad press here, but I'm not going to blame them for Sanjay Mandrake having no aesthetic sensibilities whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's not their fault.
I mean, I have to say, I'm totally against the idea as well. So for once, we all agree on stuff, isn't this? We're all getting along so well. Now, Daniel Norcross as well, can you please talk us through the wonderful Fair Break tournament that has been taking place over the last few weeks? I've been following it through Twitter, and the reaction to it from players especially is that it was a rip-roaring success.
Well, it was. It was really good fun. And what it did was it plugged that gap that exists in the women's game between becoming a global game and becoming a rather sort of narrow game, because the World Cup and the way you can qualify for the World Cup, there was a COVID did for Thailand, for example. Very exciting side, Thailand. A lot of their players got to play in this. The captain of Brazil, who's huge on Twitter, she got to play in this. We got to see stars from countries that we otherwise wouldn't do because of the way the ICC has arranged women's cricket over the last 15, 20 years. It was put on Sky. Sorry, it's on Sky. It wasn't on Sky. It was on Free Sports, but I got it on my platform. So I could watch Adam Collins, excellent broadcaster, Georgie Heath, Izzy Duncan, Jeff Lawson. It was done with a serious amount of care. And you got to see different people you didn't normally see, as supplemented by some of the stars of the game: DeAndre Dottin, Susie Bates, Heather Knight, Sophie Eccleston, etc., all there. And it sort of shines a light on what the Indians are doing with women's cricket. And they're the obvious place. I mean, an Indian Women's Premier League is the obvious place that women's cricket needs to be going for these kind of things, rather than the Fair Break Championship, which was Fair Break Cup. It's fantastic, but it's in the absence of this being taken on by India. And India, meanwhile, is having a four-team tournament, which they've had before, which doesn't really plug much of a gap and has been superseded by this tournament. So, look, it was great fun. And I thought it showcased excellent women cricketers and women cricketers we otherwise wouldn't see. And so, more of the same. They're doing it again at Hong Kong next year in March. I'll be angling for that because I have friends in Hong Kong, apart from anything else. And cricket in Hong Kong is always really good fun. Have you ever been to Hong Kong?
I've never been to Hong Kong. Finney, you been to Hong Kong?
Oh, they've got two terrific cricket clubs there. Oh, it's Hong Kong Sixes, of course, from years ago, used to be played there. Fantastic facilities, really brilliant setup. So the next edition of Fair Break, it was in the UAE. It's going to go to Hong Kong next time. I think that's going to be, something. Why don't we do a podcast from there?
I'm game. I mean, we don't have any budget for it. We can't even pay Finney yet, let alone fly to Hong Kong.
Finney will get a gig. You can, I mean, you basically work from home anyway. I mean, you just dial in your show.
Yeah.
And, and I'll just tag along.
I'll tell you one thing that Fair Break did get very right. They played 19 games in 15 days with six teams. Because the IPL, I mean, I always have it on, but doesn't half fucking drag the IPL? It could be half the amount of time. Could they not at least do two games a day?
I hear a word said against the IPL, it's provided me with 16 days of work in April that I otherwise wouldn't have got.
Well, look, they haven't paid me a penny. They've paid me as much money as we've paid Stephen Finn, all right? So I've got no fighter in this fight. And I'll tell you, honestly, it's like the other day, it was the most one-sided game ever. It was over by about the fifth over of the chase. And then that's the only game you've got on all day, and you sit a team not get anywhere near a score that they're chasing. Play some more games every day. It's only the whole point of 2020 was it's meant to be quick and easy, and yet they're setting a whole day aside so that I can watch Punjab versus Delhi at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Get over yourself, IPL. Finally, someone came out and said it.
Your problem with the IPL, just to be clear, Toby,
is it goes on too long.
It's only on for 4 hours a day, and it should be on for 8 hours a day.
Yeah, but for half the amount of days, it's just it just goes on. So many dead rubbers and pointless games. And, it's, you know what? Like, when the 2020 World Cup's on, a couple of games a day, beautiful. And then, you know, you can have one game a day when you get to the knockout stages. But When you're watching a dead rubber, who's going to come fifth or seventh in the group? I don't care.
Have you ever thought of being a major advisor to Major League Baseball? Just go to them and explain to them 162 games.
Yeah. Get over yourself.
In 220 days. I mean, you know, just shorten it.
Yeah. Just play
just
less.
Make it like 16 days, nice and quick, in and out, bang.
Exactly.
And they go, of course. Yes. That way we could like lose 90% of our ad revenue and we'll have absolutely no money in the game at all. You know why they're doing it, Toby.
I know why they're doing it. Just frustrating. And no, I haven't thought about being a Major League Baseball planner, but if they're listening, if the MLB are listening, I am available. Now, we should finish the podcast on the very, very sad news that happened this week. And I should point out, it's been a very, very rough few months for Australian cricket and cricket fans everywhere, to be fair. This is, of course, the tragic passing of Andrew Symonds, far too young age, 46, after being involved in a car crash. Finny, I asked you before we started recording if you'd ever had any experience of Andrew Symonds, but sadly, you never crossed paths as a player. But obviously, he's somebody that you would have seen a lot of over the years. It all seemed to come annoyingly easy to him, the whole sport. He was probably ahead of his time, how aggressive he was in the white ball game. But, I mean, could bat, had a test match batting average of 40, had an ODI batting average of 39.8, T20 batting average of 48. He could bowl seam, he could bowl spin. I watched the two-minute montage, because I'm very sad to have nothing better to do, of him doing direct hit runouts, and he was unbelievable with one stump to aim at, running people out. Just a really bloody good and also bloody cool cricketer. That's what it looked like from a fan's point of view anyway.
Yeah, well, it's what I used to think when I was younger as well. I mean, he was ahead of his time. Like you say, if he were to have played 20 years later, you'd imagine that he'd be one of the biggest sellers in the IPL every year, would be a household name with people for the T20 format. And yeah, you just remember him playing with a smile on his face and being ahead of his time, really. So yeah, very sad to see him pass and a tough time for Australian cricket fans and people in Australia with everything that's happened. So yeah, my thoughts go out to them.
I mean, only played 26 test matches, as I mentioned there, Daniel, but probably a sign of how bloody good that Australian side was. I saw somebody say if he was English, he would have played 100 test matches in that time.
Well, he very nearly was English because, of course, there was a question of whether he'd be England qualified. He had no interest in being England qualified. He'd always wanted to be Australian. But he played in England a lot when he was younger. He had a very good claim to be English if he wanted to. And he hit 16 sixes in a first-class match, which was a record broken only last week. I was only thinking of Andrew Symonds when Stokes hit those 17 sixes in his innings because it was Symonds and I think Graham Napier who held that record, most number of sixes hit in a match in England. He played for Gloucestershire quite fantastically, but he had a kind of laconic way. He was great in the commentary box as well. It was flamboyant, obviously. It is shocking. It's shocking and horrible. He's been described by a lot of Australian people who played with him, people like Brett Lee, as, you know, their favourite tourist, their favourite teammate. And a guy who went through the age groups and was sort of the most naturally talented, could do everything. It's horrible. It's horrible news. And for Australia and Australian cricket lovers, particularly Rod Marsh, Shane Warne, Andrew Symonds, it's a pretty horrible time. And his age as well, just 46. It's grim. It always is grim when someone's taken so young, but it's particularly grim when they're people that you hear, you know, you hear on the airwaves, and we got to know him a little bit better than we might have done other people. So yeah, horrible.
Yeah, just you know, the reaction from a lot of the Aussie players that played with him is obviously that they seem to really just find him so effortlessly cool. I saw Michael Clarke joking about him that they couldn't have been more different. Michael Clarke was this sort of pampered city boy. Andrew Symonds was as country as it got in Australia. And Michael Clarke said that somehow they formed this amazing connection over the years. And he says, I would never left my city bubble. And after about 6 months of meeting Andrew Symonds, I remember going fishing, wading out into crocodile-infested water with him because he just made me get out of my comfort zone and do things I never would have done otherwise. Really sad few months for the Australian cricket family, but just one of the coolest. Like Finney said, he would have been so marketable and just unbelievably popular in the IPL. He was made for a tournament like that. With the very cool, he used to wear the sun cream on his lips always, how I remember him. The dreadlocks coming out either side of the baggy green and the white sun cream on the lip. Just one of the coolest cricketers ever. So really sad news. Chaps, I will see you next week. I'm going to give you a heads up now that I'm going to ask you for your top seven next week in the before the England-New Zealand test match in a few weeks. So I'm going to give you a bit of homework over the next 2 weeks.
Homework? Which... I mean, first of all, the Finney's just got Robson. He's already just done Robson. He's just inked in Robson. But and look, he's nodding as he's doing it. Hit a brilliant 100, incidentally, in a drawing cause the other day against Nottinghamshire. And out of next to nothing, he batted superbly. I watched a fair bit of that innings. Look how he's nodding. Yeah, so
Finney's been banging the Robson drum for months, for 69 episodes on this podcast.
It was ever since. I mean, he really got strong, didn't it, after the barbecue that he had at Sam's place in Australia, and then he really went long. I don't know what it was that he was fed that day.
What did Sam Robson do to you at that barbecue that made you like him so much, Finney?
He paid me.
He paid you to go to his barbecue. I mean, he might get selected for England. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, you're always whinging about not getting paid for this podcast, but we could probably organise you a pack of Richmond every week if that would make you a bit less grumpy.
I mean, they taste good on a hangover. I'll give you that. But yeah, I don't plan on being hungover every day of the week, so I'm actually conscious of what I'm eating. So I'll pass, thanks.
Okay, well, you know, you tried to offer an olive branch, but that's what you get.
I've got a couple of bits of any other business.
Okay, fucking hell, there we go. Strap yourself in, Finney.
Well, but firstly, a big congratulations to Jack Roberts, because I think he sent me a tweet, direct message the other day, about 2 weeks ago, saying that all this stuff would be done and dusted. He's a regular listener of ours and a lovely man. And I hope it's all now done and dusted, Jack. So congratulations on...
Wait, what are you talking about? What
Jack
station?
Roberts. Jack Roberts, one of our... He's one of our...
Yeah, he is our listener.
He is our listener. There is... Look, there's about two other people that lay claim to it.
No, but...
So, I mean, it could be all the same person.
What are we congratulating
him on? What are we congratulating him on? It felt like you glitched and didn't say any words.
He's finished his university stuff. He's done.
Because you smashed.
Did I mumble? Sorry.
Yes.
Jack Roberts, well done on completing everything by now, hopefully, I think, because I think it's 2 weeks since he sent me the message saying everything will be done in two weeks.
This is meant to be you clearing up what he's done. You haven't said the word university. That's how any other. Yet.
Have you never been to a Labour Party local committee meeting?
To sum up, you want to congratulate our one listener, Jack Roberts, on completing everything. Well done, Jack. What are you talking about?
That's about being nice to people who take the trouble to listen to Finney being annoyed at having to do this podcast.
Still, I don't think anyone knows what he's supposed to have done. Well done, Jack.
Well, I'm not sure I do, to be brutally honest, but you know. It's academic in some way, and it seems to have been done. He was a bloke who got in touch with us about a year ago to ask us.
I know who Jack is. I just don't know what he's done.
No, neither do I. Maybe he can properly explain it. Jack,
well done, Jack.
Properly explain it. And the other bit of any other business, the last bit of any other business for tonight, is that I was at Middlesex for their four-day game, because it's quite close. Lords popped in and went into the Lords Tavern. I saw John Simpson, who was dressed in his suit and tie within about 20 minutes of the last ball being bowled. It was the most extraordinary thing to witness. And oh, how we reminisced about that day at Headingley last year in the 100. So anyway, Simo sends his love, Finney. He hasn't got the IPL contract, but I think he's fairly hopeful of BPL or Sri Lankan, whatever it is, or the Afghan Premier League. And it's all because of you.
Oh, there you go, Finney. That's nice, helping out a mate like that.
He's a good friend.
We started the podcast on Brendan McCullum and we finished on John Simpson. I'm sorry, Finney. I don't know how that's happened, mate. It wasn't even my fault.
We've not even really asked him about his knee. I mean, we're not showing any kind of care or concern.
Well, if you would like to watch me do worse than you did against Simpson and McCullum, watch me on the game against Ashton on Thursday and see another lanky bowler go around the park. 6 o'clock, so I'll probably be taking out the attack at about 6:04, I'd imagine.
I'd imagine that. Do you tend to bowl the first over, do you?
That's a good point. Let's make it 6:08. Yeah, here. We've got a Surrey under 19 kid that gets the first over. He's much better than me, weirdly. Right, chaps, lovely to see you both. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.